Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Welcome back to another edition of Covered in Glory, where we are heading into an action-packed weekend, Brett. Last week, it seems like set pieces ruled the day. I'm excited to see how everybody scores this week, but I know there will be goals because we have a great slate in front of us. Are you excited for today's show?
I am, and you know, I mentioned it in last week's show. I was trying to push you, nudging you slowly towards this. The center back bet. The center back goal score bet. You would have hit some. Just bet them all. You get them at plus 900, just bet nine of them.
Right, it here. Does seem that way. I mean, like, there was a ton of goals scored in the big six games, and it seems like an outrageous amount of them were set pieces, both for and against. Like, I don't know why the big six teams are switching off when defending against minnows on their set pieces, but then when they get a chance to stand over the ball standing still, like, they're converting. I don't know. Like, this is where your spreadsheets and my eye test start to clash. It seems like they're converting at a much higher rate in the last couple of weeks than they did earlier in the season. So I don't know if that's just more coaching, more time together on the training ground, whatever it might be, but at least feels like we're seeing more goals on free kicks and corners.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to parse that data. I think the only site that really kind of reliably tracks set piece stuff anyways is The Analyst. But it would make sense, like, logistically, because we just had a January where these teams finally actually probably had some times to get into training and work on some things. And I'm also crossing my fingers just in general that teams are starting to take set pieces more seriously, because smart analytical people for years have been saying that that is an undervalued area. It's part of the reason why Brentford's like been able to punch above their weight so well. They do excellently on set pieces. So I think that would make sense. I mean, it certainly has, to the eye test, seen like we have seen way more over the last like couple of match days. But, and I would guess that has to correspond to the fact that they have time and training to actually work on it.
Yeah. And goal scoring is up overall, so it's a good thing, right? Like, we want there to be set piece efficiency, because we don't want to see 1-0 games. Like, they're fun when they're 2-1, 3-2, or 6-0 in Arsenal's case. Holy hell, was that a capitulation from West Ham? But we'll get more into that later. So to start the show, Brett, the NBA All-Star game is this weekend. We've gone from the Super Bowl to the All-Star game. We're in this thick part of sports that's pretty fun to enjoy. And I know that this is two Americans talking about the great sacred Premier League, and we can never touch any of these things. And Todd Boehly found out what would happen if you even dared to speak into a microphone and generate the idea, but we're going to do it anyway. So because they will never play this game, because they won't ever actually carry through on it, there's no place in the calendar for them to do so. The guys who would feature in the match are the same people that are wildly overtaxed for club and country already. So I don't think they should ever actually hold the game, but it's super fun to pick the sides. And so, like, while Boehly might never be able to make his $200 million by filling up stadiums and having skills contests and all those sorts of things, we can still dream about what it would look like if they did. And by the way, free idea out there for EA Sports, just simulate it. Just simulate it. All we want to do is argue about it. All we want to do is have talking heads discuss it. All we want to do is be at the pub and say which team, who should start for the North and who should start for the South. That's all we really want as fans. The NBA All-Star Game sucks. The MLB All-Star Game sucks. The Pro Bowl is now freaking flag football because it was so bad. We don't need the contest. We just need to fight. So let's have that fight here. We're going to divide into the North and South. I took the North. Brett took the South. And we're going to talk about who should have actually made these games.
Yeah, I mean, this is cathartic for me too, because I think my favorite thing at the end of every season is to rip on the team or the 11 of the year, however it comes out. So now I get to actually pick it and other people are going to be able to rip on me. So this is great. Like, I feel like it's full circle. I won't feel as guilty because now I'm putting something out in the world that people can mock.
Cats in the cradle for a soccer analyst. So the rules of this were basically we drew the line at London. You got Luton. I don't know that you even knew that, or if it would affect your team.
I did. Not. It did not affect my all-star team though.
Oh, this is why I gave you the South instead of me doing it, because my team would have just been 11 Ross Barkleys. That's all I would need if I had Luton myself.
I was tempted to throw Ross and Andros Townsend as former Evertonians in there, but I was able to hold off. I have integrity, Toby.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You know, you're really stretching. You're stretching your integrity by claiming you have integrity, coincidentally. So Luton and South, which is the seven London area, or the eight area London area teams with Luton, and then Bournemouth and Brighton, and then I took the North. And so why don't you go ahead and give us your defensive setup first, rather than just give all the 11, and we'll go back and forth that way.
So I technically cheated a wee bit. Instead of putting someone like Estupiñán or Anthony Robinson or someone in at left back, Saka has technically come up as a left back. He could definitely play left wing back. I could also play just a back three.
You're playing Saka at left back? I thought I was cheating it. You're playing freaking Saka at left back?
There's two ways that you could have looked at it. You could put Declan Rice as a center back, another thing, and then kick one of my other guys out to the left side and playing a 4-4-2.
So you are claiming that he's like top five in goal creation this year in the Premier League, and he's doing that from left back on the right wing. That's incredible.
I had to cheat. I was not going to put Zinchenko, Robinson, Estupiñán in just to put somebody in there. So we're gonna call it a very fluid. I mean, this is Pep. This is positional football. It doesn't matter.
First of all, Pep's coaching my team. Pep's coaching my team. You've got who do you guys? I guess you have Arteta. Or you
I
got
have Arteta. Poch.
You got Ange Ball.
Cancelo ruined the idea, and Trent Alexander-Arnold have ruined the idea of what a fullback is anyways, with the way that they inferred, and they are very, very, very involved in the final third. But whether you put Saka as a wing back and a back three, or whether we just do the world's force 3-3-4 formation, that's where we wound up here.
One of us took this seriously, and one of us put Saka at left back. All right, keep going.
I mean, that's where he came up. We'll put it that way.
He played a single minute there this season. This isn't a career thing. This isn't where were they when they were eight. This is where they played this season.
Well, technically, it was where he was when he was 18. So that was he's played.
Was
he
18 this year?
Eight.
Was he 18 this year? This is the 2024 All-Star team. That's what this is. What are you doing?
All right, to make it conform to you, we'll put Declan Rice in at center back, and we'll move somebody over to the left
who
side
also
so
hasn't
we have
played.
A back.
He's the best center back pairing in the world behind him. He's played 0 minutes at center back. You have not still given it a viable option here.
Well, I mean, well, this is what I'll do. We'll put in Pervis Estupiñán then. We'll swap somebody out at left back to fit this. So it is a regular formation, even though the NBA All-Star game has very, very little defense, and Saka at left back would fit right into a soccer All-Star game.
Yeah, I understand that. But Wemby doesn't like get to start at point guard. Like they still have, even if he brings the ball up the court,
Shaq has played point guard in all-star games.
Integrity in the way you structure the team in order to reflect the performance on the season.
Okay. Well, we will make an amendment then, and we will put an actual left back in, but I'll actually start from the right side first. So this was always going to be something where I was going to pick Arsenal defenders, because it's hard to use counting stats to pick defenders, because for a team like Arsenal that possesses a ton of the ball, that basically is not going to have guys that rack up a ton of tackles and interceptions and things like that, because they just constantly are on the ball. So they're not winning it back. And so those stats can be misleading in a lot of ways. So one of the bigger functions, and one of the things that basically has gone into my three core center back pairings here, is just if you played a lot of minutes for a really good defensive team, you are clearly contributing something to the core of that defensive integrity that they're building. So Ben White makes the cut. He played about 20 more minutes than Gabriel. But Ben White is at about 1,820 minutes for the world's best defense. He actually has had a little bit of a drop off in terms of some of his progressive passing. When he was at Brighton, that was like one of the main things that they brought him over for. We haven't seen too much of that. I think partially it's because of the way Arteta plays. He's a super controlling manager, more so than probably Pep is. And so they don't want him to do those types of things. But his ability to kind of play as like a hybrid fullback, center back, allows Zinchenko and whoever's in it at left back for Arsenal these days to basically push forward up the field has just been a huge part about building the base of this Arsenal team. And then obviously the guy who's played the most minutes of any defender is Saliba. You mentioned him before. He has played 2,160 minutes for Arsenal this year. And on top of everything that we've talked about is just being, you know, he's part of the best center back pairing in the league. He is, I mean, if we were talking about Ruben Diaz as player of the season, he's got to be in that conversation at this point. And so you're talking about 2,160 minutes for the best defensive club in the world. And he's added two set piece goals on top of that. The other one is going to be a little bit interesting here, and it's Ilya Zabarnyi. So this dude came to Bournemouth, and it was kind of a coup when Bournemouth got him. He was considered a Champions League caliber player. There were other clubs in the Champions League that were looking at this, and this dude ended up going to Bournemouth. And so last season, Bournemouth's defense was a train wreck. They allowed the fourth highest expected goals against throughout the entire season. And Zabarnyi played only 299 minutes for him. This year, he's played over 2,070. And that team has risen from basically 16th and jumped all the way up near the top half. They're just a shade out of 10th place. And he has solidified them. We're not talking about Bournemouth and relegation that much anymore, especially after this recent run. Left back, per our conversation at the beginning, I'll swap in Purvis Estupian. He would be the one player from Brighton that I think would make the most sense. He is a very attacking left back, and he has a clear impact for that side. He basically plays as an attacker for them. He's been in and out of the lineup this year, but he still has two goals and three assists. He's like third in the team in shot creating actions. And so he would be the nominal left back for my team. And then I think without saying the goalkeeper to kind of round this out, and then I'll throw it over to you, is Vaquero from Spurs. I mean, that team would be nowhere. He leads the league with plus 6.6 post shot XG saves. That means he saved almost 6.5 goals worth of shots on target. He is by far and away the thing that are keeping Spurs afloat this year. So he is the no-brainer nod in goal for me.
Well, I would agree with that. Over on my side on goalkeeper, I'm playing Erling Haaland. My scouts told me that he was a very tall 6-year-old, and one time he put the gloves on in a youth game, and so I think he qualifies per the way that you set your team up. So that's where I'm going to know. Goalkeeper is pretty clear. It's going to be Alisson. Best goalkeeper in the world, so why wouldn't he be the goalkeeper for my side over at Liverpool? I did put in different rules than you put in for yourself, because I did this a little more seriously. I limited myself to 4 players per team, and that really is going to shine through in a couple of the selections. But even if you limit to 4 Liverpool players or 4 City players, Alisson has to be one of those. He's the guy who's going to put the gloves on. At center back, this is what I was most surprised about, Brett. Trying to like analyze this and who's had the biggest impact. And of course you have to factor in injuries and time played. Like, you did a good job doing the minutes breakdown. Center backs are a lot weaker than I think they've been historically, maybe throughout the entire league, but certainly in this set of teams that I had available to me. And like, Ruben Diaz isn't having the same quality of year he's had in the past. Like, Josko has been playing mostly left back, and I think he's been playing out of position, so he hasn't shined as much. Akanji's been injured a whole lot. I mean, I'm sure we can keep going down the list of the usual names. So I actually had to put one usual name in there, even though I think he's far off of his best form, and that's Virgil van Dijk. Virgil van Dijk's going to make my all-star team because I have to compare him to the standard set by the rest of the league right now, not by the standard of Virgil van Dijk 3 years ago. So on the current year, I think he's still one of the best two in the northern half of England. So he makes it. And the guy I'm putting next to him is Nathan Aki. Again, just not a lot of other great choices, but I think he's been their most dependable and versatile player. They are able to throw him out there almost every single game, and he goes out and gives out a positive contribution. Plus, in an all-star game like this, he's able to get forward a little bit, which will be fun for everybody to watch. And then out on the sides, I thought I was cheating, and you set a brand new standard for it, so thank you for assuaging any tiny guilt I felt. And I'm going to play Kieran Trippier out on the left back to make room for your boy Trent Alexander-Arnold on the right. Given the year the TA is having, it would be extreme bias if I did not put him in the right back position, but Trippier deserves his flowers as well. They've been two of the most impactful players in the entire league, so they both need to make their way, and Trippier has played some left back this year. TA's you know, been very good. And if I was really like doing this right, I would have put him in the midfield, but he'll start right back for my team. So let's go ahead and now get into that midfield. What are you doing in the midfield for the South?
Well, Declan Rice, I think, is going to be the no-brainer. That I'm eating crow on that one because I was a little bit concerned about him moving from a team that doesn't have the ball in West Ham to Arsenal, who would have a lot of the ball. And I thought maybe there was a chance that he could be exposed a little bit there. He's been awesome. Same deal, plays a ton for the best defensive team in the world. He has the most progressive passes, which are passes that travel 10 yards closer to the goal on the team as well. So not only is he being that shield, helping Saliba and Gabriel kind of solidify things through the spine, but he's pumping the ball into the final third. He's moving the ball forward for Arsenal. He's just a fulcrum for them to transition from the back line into the attack. And he's going to be paired with one of his guys. I kept it to at least so only half of my team was Arsenal guys, but he's going to be paired with two people that you love, Cole Palmer, which he has five penalties this year that kind of have inflated his goal total. But here's the thing about penalties. Not everybody can convert them. So, yeah. He's gotten a lot of chances, but he's 5 for 5. And you have mentioned this on broadcast. He is a shining light in the darkness. I thought a little bit about Enzo, who's got a lot of value in terms of moving the ball off the pitch, but it's Cole Palmer. He's unlocking things in the final third. He's converting penalties. He's creating chances out of nowhere. He has been an absolute revelation for that team and probably the thing that puts a smile on your face the most watching Chelsea. And I'm going to pair him with your
favorite. The final whistle is what puts the smile on my face the most. But keep going.
Well, the final thing that I will have in my midfield is your favorite bet in the whole world is the Martin Odegaard shot on target.
Yes.
Odegaard, I've loved Odegaard since he was an Uber prospect way back when. He was just mostly a passer at that point, but as you have bet and shown through your betting, he's added goals, he's added assists, he's been just an ever-present player in that Arsenal midfield, and he is so well-rounded now. Like he's one of the most well-rounded midfielders in terms of passing and attacking. He's just great, and he's a joy to watch, and he's made you a lot of money.
Yeah, no arguments there. That's a pretty enticing midfield. Like it's just why it's fun to put these together. Like I don't even need to see it on the pitch. It's just fun to like discuss and think about. Very first guy on my team sheet. I think he has been the best player or the most. I don't know about best. He's been the most impactful player in the entire league this year, and that's Rodri. When he's out, they are entirely beatable. When he's on the field, they are inevitable. And like if you have one guy who fills that incredible position for them that swings them from like, okay, maybe they will draw to a bottom half of the table team, 0-0 or 1-1, to I don't think anybody in the world could beat them right now. He's got to be the first guy on the sheet, even though he's not going to be the most exciting guy in an all-star game. On the either side of him, I'm going to play Fernandez from United because you want to talk about shining lights and seas of darkness. He has certainly been that for United. You can't really ascertain his quality as well because he's been surrounded by so much dysfunction between Marcus Rashford and everything else that's going on at that club, but he has been his usual excellent self, and so he deserves a starting spot. And then this is where my self-imposed four-player limit kind of kicks in. Plus, this team deserves a representative. Like you hear about that in the NBA All-Star game every once in a while. Like if a team is top three or four, somebody needs to be out on the court. So instead of Szoboszlai, because I have four Arsenal guys ahead of him, I am playing Douglas Luiz from Villa. Douglas Luiz has been very good this year. Villa is regressing right now, but we're not talking about who's the all-stars of the last 2 weeks. We're talking about the entire first half of the year. He's been one of the main drivers of that squad to get into a Champions League qualifying position. So I'm rewarding him with a spot in the midfield for this team. What about the attacking band, Brett? Where are you going?
Well, first off, Douglas Luiz also is being hunted by Arsenal. So clearly you're not the only one that values him there in the midfield. For my attacking band, and it's now 4-3-3, just basically right to left. It's going to be Saka. I mean, I could mention everything about him, but he has the most, he's in the top 10 in progressive carries, top 10 in touches in the attacking third, top player in terms of touches in the penalty area, plus all the goals and assists. So he is definitely going to be on my right side. And here's another one that might be a little bit of a curveball. I guess if you just look at the goals tally in the Premier League, it's not. But Dominic Solanke, if we would have bet that we would be putting Dominic Solanke in our All-Star game at the beginning of the season, I don't even know what that odds number would have been, but it would have been way out there. And if we bet it, we'd be rich. But he's got 13 goals. That's third in the Premier League. And the thing is he's not even running hot. His expected goal total is 12.4 and he's at 13. So he's actually on his production and the third most productive attacker in the Premier League right now. He's been great. And then Son has played kind of left wing and striker for Spurs this year. So we'll put him back on the left side. He just beats out Jared Bowen, but Son has 18 goal involvements, 12 goals, 6 assists. He overruns his expected goal total, but that's just because he's one of the best finishers in the world. We talk about XG comes for everybody but Messi. Son is sort of the tier below Messi in between where everybody else gets XG comes for everybody else. He is an elite finisher, so I kind of overlooked those numbers. And then just the assist totals are, again, he's not even running hot. He has 6.3 expected assists, 6.5 expected assists, and 6 total assists. So he's actually slightly underperforming that number. I mean, he has been, revitalized in this Ange attack here. And another guy after you crawled, I sit here every year. I'm going to probably do it next year too and be like, I think this is the year Son has washed. And then 18 goal involvements later, here he is in the All-Star game.
Is it fair to say Madison didn't qualify because of the time he missed her injury? Because otherwise he seemed to be a glaring omission right now.
Yes. The only reason is his son has just been more present than him in the starting 11. So he got the nod. And plus I needed a Chelsea guy and Cole Palmer, and I'm not going to knock out Odegaard, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you needed a Chelsea guy. And I actually think Solanke is a deserved selection. But it's also an indictment of the money spent on strikers by the rest of like the Southern teams. Like, you clearly aren't playing Jesus or anybody on Arsenal in that spot. You already have Son from Tottenham. Like, obviously the Chelsea striker is, you know, the cursed shirt. It's the defensive against the dark arts position at Hogwarts. And then like down in Brighton, like Evan Ferguson can't even beat out Danny Welbeck all of a sudden. Like, the guy is allegedly worth 100 million and he can't beat out a guy who's worth 100 pence. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on down there. So I think Solanke is an inspired choice and the right choice.
Yeah, it's been an incredible year for him. I mean, we've talked about him a little bit beforehand, but I mean, he makes Bournemouth worth watching. That's what I'll say.
For sure. So I had a lot of options up in the north, obviously. So this is really hard to narrow down, but I think the three choices are pretty much unimpeachable, even though there's going to be some pissed off guys on the bench. And it's Mo Salah out on the right. It's Phil Foden on the left, and it's Haaland through the middle. I mean, like, I think I could just save everybody 5 minutes by talking about these guys' virtues, because I think they're so clear to everybody. But despite a stacked bench, I don't see any other choice that you can make besides Salah, Foden, and Haaland for this season. Do you? I mean, do you think I'm overlooking anybody who could actually displace that incredible trident?
No. I mean, maybe Jeremy Doku, there's a little bit of an argument there. But, I mean, Foden seems to be the guy that really stepped up in the absence of KDB. And, I mean, he just never gets enough credit. Like, as the part of me would just say he deserves the All-Star thing because he has been one of the most talented players in the Premier League since he was like 20 years old or 19 years old, whenever you want to say he came into his own there. And he never seems to get any credit. He just seems to kind of float around the City formation, do a bunch of great stuff. And then, you know, Doku, Grealish get the new shiny object. Haaland is obviously a monster, and then KDB always takes a shine. So he's sort of the forgotten man. So I think for that vein, I would want to, you know, push him into an All-Star berth just for some recognition.
So I did a bench and some snubs as well. I'll just run through them. We won't really talk about them. You can see after I run through that list, like, you should opine if anybody should have made my 11. I needed to pick one defender to have on the bench, even though it's an All-Star game. So I picked Dallow from United. I was surprised as anybody else, but that again comes into the 4-player limit that I put on myself. I wanted to recognize somebody from Everton because without the 10-point penalty, they would be way above expectation right now. So James Garner, congratulations. You get a spot on the All-Star bench. Ollie Watkins was a tough omission, but you're behind Haaland. Sorry about that. Like, what do you want to do? Then Pedro Neto for Wolves, Guy Maurice for Newcastle. And then, of course, you cannot have an all-star game or a bench without a backup goalkeeper. So for an all-star game, it is definitely Onana, because he's going to try to go post to post. He is going to take a back pass and try to beat all 11 guys for a goal all the way down the field, and I'm here for it. So we are throwing him not on merit, but for entertainment value. Snubs because of the four-player limit are Szoboszlai, Nunez, Doku, Alvarez, Bernardo Silva, and the last two guys I'll shout out as snubs are Wang from Wolves and Isak from Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, mine were actually pretty easy, relatively, just because two of the probably hardest guys I would to maybe omit for me were just omitted due to injury, which is Mitoma and Madison. If those guys were healthy, I would have a lot tougher choice probably to fill out that starting 11. And then Jared Bowen was just a miscut, but I mean, West Ham, I mean, his goal tally is impressive, like, don't get me wrong, but West Ham is going to be fading quickly, and I think he just kind of is like a good player in the right system for him. And I just don't think he'd be like super exciting in an all-star game, but if Mitoma and Madison were healthy, I would have had a lot harder choices on my hand for the attackers.
All right. So I know we're nothing but two wankers, but come on, Premier League, have a fan vote, have a selection, get the managers involved, give people even more stuff to argue about. Like, soccer is 12 months a year, 24 hours a day of nothing but people debating all these different things. Give them one more thing and then either simulate it or don't even hold the game. Just have the carnival, but you don't need to have anything else. That is my suggestion to you. Super easy to do and super fun. Get on it. Right after this break, we will get on our picks. Let's give Caesar some love, and we will get into this week's action.
You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up, OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, Brett, we are back, and you cheated very heavily at the top of the show with Saka at left back, which I'm still reeling from. We are going to cheat slightly on this week's action. Our study abroad is going to take us down to Portugal, but not for a Portuguese league game, for a Champions League game between Porto and Arsenal. It gives us a chance to talk about all big six clubs, but also get to a team that has been ignored all years. We do not spend a lot of time on the Portuguese league, but that is not where we are starting. We are starting with what used to be a title decider and now is just an absolute embarrassment. Was a Champions League final less than 3 years ago. And that is Manchester City, second at 52 points, versus Chelsea, 10th at 34 points. This game is Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Manchester City is minus 300. Draw is plus 425. Chelsea is plus 750. After spending $1 billion on the club, they are still a goal and a half underdog here at minus 105 to City. Chelsea, to try to keep it close, is minus 125. So, Brett, we saw City have kind of a little bit of a down game last time against Everton and still win 2-0. They somehow did not have a shot on target for 71 minutes. But I do have a question for you from the end of that game. After Haaland's run where he controls the ball in space and then runs directly at your boy Tarkowski, and Tarkowski literally bounces off of him, falls to the ground before Haaland slots home, does Tarkowski have to retire? Does that have to be his last action on the pitch? Can you come back from that?
As an Everton supporter, I have seen numerous players theoretically end careers with things like that. Michael Keane should have been, you know, put out to pasture probably 5 years ago, the number of times that he's been playing in a higher line and just getting smoked. But yeah, I mean, that's like the soccer version of like being posterized. Is he like the Frederick Weiss of soccer right now?
I mean, I don't think it's just like a standard poster, though. Like, what was the there was a dunk a few years ago where somebody on the Pistons fell over while Jordan dunked from him from like 9 feet away. And just everything afterwards was like RIP. Like, the guy, he was just buried there in the middle of the court. Like, it was that. Like, I remember that meme like 6-7 years later because that dunk was so nasty. And that's how I feel about that goal on Tarkowski.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of those things, though, because it's Haaland. It doesn't make it as bad for me. It's like, oh yeah, you just got Haaland. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be like every player that has Wemby like block a three-pointer in their face. Before, that would have been like an extremely embarrassing thing. Now it's just like, oh yeah, you got Wemby. Sorry, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm here for like the and one version where instead of kicking the ball in the net, Haaland kicks it into like the third row of the upper deck and just walks off while everybody goes, oh. That's what I would have preferred happen in that moment. For Chelsea last week, they get a spot of redemption. They beat Palace 3-1 away, meaning they have now beat Palace 13 consecutive times in the league, which I didn't know. It is also just a wild stat. And I think it ties for the record for one team over another team in Premier League history. So sorry about that, Palace. I think, and I texted you this, I think what really should happen is instead of spending all these money on like 16-year-old South American kids, Chelsea should just buy literally the pitch from Crystal Palace, install it at the bridge, and then collect Ballon d'Ors for Conor Gallagher until he can't carry them all. Because it seems to be the only place that he is the best player in the world, both on his loan and whenever he visits there now.
I mean, he clearly has a soft spot for that place. Two goals to basically save a match, really. I mean, that was pretty ugly. We were texting at halftime of that match, and it was pretty ugly at that point. So, yeah, I mean, I say whatever gets Conor Gallagher the Ballon d'Or, I think you have to do it. So go over there, just get your sod roller, just start rolling up Selhurst Park and bring it over to Stamford Bridge.
So you mentioned that we were texting at halftime of that game. Like, in terms of handicapping this matchup, after watching Chelsea play Liverpool, there's no place I can go except for the City adjusted line and keep any, like, the last tiny bit, the tiniest bit of credibility I might still have is on the line here. And so, like, you can't watch them get trucked by Liverpool and then suddenly expect them to beat City. Although I will say, with the quality they actually have, 750 is a pretty enticing number. Like, I think it... Could they beat City 1 out of 8 times? Yes. You know, 1-0 on some sort of good goal, and then City just has a bad day converting against pretty talented defenders, even if they can't seem to play together. But it does come back to the manager. And so, like, if we had Tommy Tuchel in this matchup, 750 would be a layup. I would take that 1,000 times out of 1,000. I mean, that's kind of the point. If we had Tuchel, it wouldn't be 750. We wouldn't be in this position. So you were texting me a lot about your thoughts on Poch. Is Pochettino managing this team having the biggest impact of anything else of how you're handicapping this match?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest beef I had with the Crystal Palace match is, like, Gusto and Caicedo shouldn't be on the pitch at the same time against a team that you're going to control the ball against. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And he's had enough time to kind of figure out what Caicedo and what Gusto are. But I think actually the ironic part about this now is, like, this is the match where you want to roll out a lineup like that. You want guys that are going to defend and cover space and be more defensive oriented players, because they are not going to see the ball a lot against City. And you mentioned this before, and I'm actually glad you did, because the plus 750 number on the money line, if you look, I mean, look, it is easy to get disappointed about Chelsea's season. Their underlying numbers do not suggest that they should be basically an 8-1 dog in this match. Yeah. Like, that makes no sense whatsoever, especially as they're getting a little bit healthier, especially as Cole Palmer is coming on. Like, I don't really understand it. I don't know if I would bet it, but it's the value play for me. Like, plus 750. We have seen Chelsea go toe-to-toe with Liverpool. We've seen Chelsea go toe-to-toe.
Well, not the last time out. They were blown off the pitch. Like, that Liverpool match is what made me say I had to take City, because, like, 4-1 wasn't even reflective of how dominant Liverpool were versus Chelsea in that game.
Well, I was talking about the very first match of the season where they absolutely dominated Liverpool for, like, 60 minutes of that match.
Yeah, back when I had hope. I remember it.
Before it all escaped your soul. Yeah, well, I mean, and then, you know, just in a more recent events, you know, they had the 4-4 match against City as well. So they've clearly shown it's in their range of outcomes to go punch for punch with teams that are better than them. And they're set up, like, this is the other kind of ironic thing about this team. I think they're set up better with the current players that Poch seems to be wanting to play against better teams that are going to control the ball. I think that's better doing that. And so the 750 is just too high of a number. I think that's where you place your money if you're going to make a value play. Whether I do that with my money in real life is TBD, but I do think that that is way, way, way too high of a line given the underlying strength and the fact that Ben Chilwell's back. Like, they have an actual good fullback now that's available to him.
Yeah, I mean, they can play a real formation that can challenge them, but, like, when they were beating – there's two main differences, and this is, like, no crap, Toby. There's two main differences from back when they were super competitive with City versus now. One is the manager, which we are, you know, kind of already shouted out, and the other one's N'Golo Kanté. And so, like, N'Golo Kanté, not single-handedly, but, you know, I don't know what the phrase, one step off of single-handedly, won them that Champions League matchup. And so you would need Caicedo to actually fulfill what we paid for, which was, if not a Kanté regen, somebody who could at least do a serviceable impression. And so, like, he's going to have to be so much better in this match than he was against Liverpool and than he's been throughout the season for them to be able to replicate that same famous victory that I still agree. And, you know, I said it too, 750 is too high, but in terms of it actually coming true and what we're going to see on the field, and the midfield matters so much to them, and they are not getting the $220 million worth of money that they spent on Enzo Caicedo right now.
Yeah, and I mean, Caicedo is definitely not a plug and play in N'Golo Kanté. I think at that point, that's
no one is.
Yeah, and but I do think that one of his biggest deficiency is he is bad in possession. And so matches where he has to be on the ball a lot, he's going to look way worse. And this is kind of one of those things where I think this suits him. Like, City's going to have 65, maybe 70% of the ball in this match. And Chelsea's going to be attacking in transitions, which means they don't really need to worry about Caicedo having turnovers deep in the pitch, because he's not going to really be touching the ball much there.
That's where I like your point about City being in possession. And if Caicedo could get in there and break some of that up and spring a counter versus getting pressured himself and having rapid turnovers, and then, you know, Silva doesn't have the pace to cover behind him on a turnover like he used to, then I like that point quite a bit, that they're actually strangely better set up to take on City than Liverpool, even if City is a better team than Liverpool.
Yeah, and when that to me is where the indictment of Poch is, really, is Pochettino should know that at this point. Like, yes, you can blame some of the injuries that he couldn't get his ideal setup in, but he had available players against Crystal Palace that he did not need to play Caicedo and Gusto together in that match. And Brighton laid out the blueprint. I mean, De Zerbi played Caicedo at right back numerous times, at least a handful. So the template was out there for him to do it, but this will just kind of play into Pochettino's hands because he's going to roll out his preferred starting 11. And it just so happens to match up better in this setting. But the one thing
my blood didn't fully start boiling until I thought about your point when you texted it to me. It is wild, now that I think about it, that Desailly has played so many minutes at right back and Caicedo has played zero. Like, given those two guys' skill sets, if you have to have emergency cover on right back, why the hell is it Desailly over Caicedo?
Yeah, and I mean, and not to get into tactics Twitter here, but the fact that Caicedo is the guy that often drops deep to pick up the ball off the center backs is just insane to me. I think the logic would be, well, where else do you put him? Which is also the logic where you say, yeah, you play him like Aaron Wan-Bissaka and you stick him at right back. But
all right, what do you got in the prop market?
Yeah, so the prop market is probably where I feel more comfortable, and that is City to win and both score plus 135 for a pint. I don't think I can do the Chelsea money line, even though I think that's a little bit better value. This one allows me to say Chelsea can handle some punches and punch back a little bit, but City ultimately comes on top and you get a plus number for it.
One of my favorite bets right now, it's a portfolio bet. I made it on Trendy this week in the Champions League, so you're not going to get any pushback from me on that one. It does go a little bit into my prop bet because, you know, you want to play a little bit of narrative here. If Chelsea is going to get on the board, then Cole Palmer, I trust fully to be at the center of it. So Cole Palmer to score or assist is plus 230, which is one I like a lot for him to impress his old manager, play out of his mind as he shows them they never should have sold him as he wanted to come up there. But in order to find that number, Brett, I had to look at all of the score or assist props. They are wild. They are wild. I almost didn't, it's not only I almost didn't text you, I almost called you. And I don't think I've ever called you in my entire life. I don't think I've ever dialed the 10 digits to get you voice to voice to talk about something off of the show. And this blew my mind. Guess how many City players have a better odds, shorter odds to score or assist in a game against the billion-pound Chelsea squad?
Oh, I actually noticed this as well. That's funny that you mentioned it up. I think it was like 5, right?
It is 12.
12?
12 what? Players have better odds to score or assist against a team that just spent $1 billion, Brett. $1 billion. And by the way, you can only play 10 outfielders. These guys aren't even all going to be on the pitch to start the field. They're not even going to be eligible for this bet. 12 of them. I will read them out. Erling Haaland, great. You got me. Kevin De Bruyne, okay. World class. Third on the list. Third on the list, Brett. You want to take a guess? Third on the list?
Alvarez.
Oscar Bibb is minus 135. Bob. I'm sorry, Oscar Bob is one. I'm so mad. I just called him Oscar Bibb. Oscar Bob, 135. Alvarez is next. Fifth. Take a guess who's fifth.
I'm Doku.
Micah Hamilton. I had to look up who that was.
I thought it was 5, because those are just dudes that are like bit players that I think they put weird odds on.
Minus 115. Yeah. Like, do I need to report this to responsible gambling? Like, why is that dude at minus 115? What the hell is going on? Grealish, Foden is seventh. After Bob and Hamilton at a plus number when those other guys are minus. Doku, Silva, Matthew Nunez, Kova, and Sergio Gomez all have shorter odds than Nkunku, who is the first Chelsea player to appear on the list. What is happening?
That is bonkers. I remembered it being a lot. I think my mind blocks out when I see like Oscar Bob ahead of Phil Foden in an anytime goal scorer column. So I probably wasn't counting those guys, but that seems off. Like the fact that Kova's ahead of anybody on Chelsea when the only shots he takes are really bad ones from way outside the box. I don't really get that. That seems a little odd. I think someone might be drunk at the wheel over at Caesars making those odds for the City match.
So not at Caesars, I will say that. So Caesars would never do anything like that. I got that from another book. When I was younger, you know, I was a little bit more into politics and things like that. And people ever asked me if I was going to run for office. And now I kind of wish I had, because I would just be having congressional hearings about stuff like this. Like, forget about everything else happening in our world. Forget about the fight between the left and the right on everything else. We can't agree on anything. But can we please, please drag in some Ozmakers to explain this to me under subpoena?
I would love to read the transcript of you questioning an executive from a sports book about Oscar Bob. I just want to see that transcript. That sounds like a Veep episode, to be honest.
Cheddar Bob should have been like 13th on the list if Oscar Bob is going to be a minus number. What the hell are we? All right. Better move on before I get in trouble. So Cole Palmer was plus 230. That was my prop bet. Let's move to the next game, which is Brentford 14th at 25 points versus Liverpool first at 54 points. This game is Saturday at 7:30 a.m. Liverpool is minus 180. Brentford is plus 425. The draw is plus 340. Liverpool minus a goal and a half is plus 135. Brentford is minus 180. So in this matchup, Liverpool suddenly is starting to have a little bit of injury pile up. Szoboszlai and Trent Alexander-Arnold are both out. They will be out for extended periods. They will also miss the cup final against Chelsea next week. We will get to see if Connor Bradley was a one-hit wonder, as he is about to get a run of games, which I am looking forward to. But even with those injuries, Salah returned to training yesterday. They're going to have start to get the rest of their team together, and they're just demonstrably better than Brentford. So I know it's not sexy. I'm not going to take them on the adjusted because of those injuries, because chance creation without Szoboszlai and TAA is going to be a little bit in shorter order, and I think Brentford will score. So I'm going to be at minus 180 instead of the adjusted plus 135.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds weird to say this about the minus 180, but that line is definitely decent value, because I thought the money line would be minus 200, minus 220. I'm assuming that the reason it's probably all the way down at minus 180 is when you're talking about some of the injury absences being a bigger factor than maybe I'm guessing the bookmaker should have made it. But I mean, I would probably thought long and hard at minus 200 to take Liverpool on this money line. But I think I'm going to take them definitely where it is now. And then I'm doing the same bet here too, just because of the injuries. I am taking Liverpool to win and both to score plus 160, because Brighton just finds ways to manufacture goals. This is why I have almost literally no faith in any attacker outside of Tony on Brentford. But Brentford just can do this. Ben Mee might score a goal. Ethan Pinnock might score a goal. Who knows where it's going to come from? A long throw, a set piece, a clever little in-swinging corner that gets, you know, batted around the box, whatever it is. And Liverpool's been a little bit vulnerable there. So I love that you're getting plus 160 to get the Liverpool money line, basically, and all Brentford's got to do is score a goal.
Ditto. It's actually the same prop I wrote down. Nice. Liverpool win, both teams to score. Brentford scored in their last nine. Pools conceded in their last five. If Datro Fofana could convert, Liverpool would have given up three against Burnley. He blew two consecutive one-on-ones. It's nice to know that he is Chelsea material. He is a true blue when he can't score goals, when he's one-on-one versus the keeper. So it's nice to know that that he'll be wearing the number nine pretty soon for Chelsea. But yeah, I love this bet. It is also going to appear in my five pint. So we might be canceling each other out.
Yeah, we are. Spoiler alert, we are.
Spoiler alert, there we are. All right, not much else to say about that one. We ran long at the beginning of the show, so we're going to shorten this up a little bit. Tottenham, fourth, it's 47 points versus Wolves, 11th at 32 points. This game is Saturday at 10 a.m. Spurs are minus 200. Wolves are plus 475. The draw is plus 360. Spurs, goal and a half. I was surprised at Caesars to see them a goal and a half plus 135. Wolves are minus 180. Last week when we were talking about that Brighton match, we forgot to bring up, or at least I forgot to bring up, the De Zerbi touchline ban. And that's another thing I've noticed this year, in addition to the increase in set piece conversion. These touchline bans seem to materially matter. And not in like, oh, you know, like the next guy can just step up and do it. But like, I'm not bringing into my handicapping as much as I can, because I think managers ultimately don't matter. But I think they do underperform when the guy's not there, especially when Brighton was coached by someone wearing a Jurgen Klopp Halloween costume. Who the hell was that guy? Looked like he went to Walgreens right beforehand and bought the mask.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually be very curious to see the data on that. I don't know. I mean, it seems like in the technological age, DeZerbe is still managing from like wherever he's just like texting someone or there's an earpiece in somewhere. But I would really actually be fascinated because I have noticed the same thing that I've seen some sort of disappointing performances when there's a touchline ban. And I don't know if it's like one of those things where like, you know, dad's running the show and mom, the disciplinarian, isn't home. So we're just going to run all over the house and dad's not going to yell at us kind of deal. Like, I don't know if it's something like that, but I would really love it. I don't know if there's any way that you could parse that other than going through every individual Premier League game where a manager's had a touchline ban and just seeing what happened. But I would be actually pretty fascinated to see if that does have a material effect.
Well, I know just the guy to do it, and he's the one sitting in a dark room with nothing on his walls. What else you got going on? So for this particular game, as I kind of tip my hand saying that I'm surprised to see the 1.5, these games are just way too open for Spurs to be favored by multiple goals.
Yes.
I do not see the logic in that. They're just like anything can happen in these matchups. The range of outcomes is wild, and I just don't see how like they end up winning by two enough to justify a plus 135 number. So I'm on Wolves minus 180 on the plus 1.5 because the Spurs have only won by multiple goals in one of the last 10 matches, and they're far more likely to be tied going into extra time and pull yet another game out of the than they are to blow somebody out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I will admittedly say I suck at handicapping Wolves, but I would actually go all the way to the money line on this one just because I'm in the same boat as you. There are so many ranges of outcomes in a Spurs match, and we've talked about Madison being back as a big difference maker for them. He does not really have that big of an impact on goals allowed, which is where the variance in their matches come from. So you're telling me that any team really is should be like almost a 5-1 dog against Spurs with the way that they play? I don't think so. And so I'm going to cheat there too and do this where I kind of feel bad. I'm doing this three times in this slate, but Spurs win, both score plus 135. Because of that, that's the one that I'm doing. So I hate to do it a third time and be a little redundant, but I think that's where the money's got to go here.
I think that's smart, and my prop plays into that as well because I think the Wolves score, and if they score, I think Neto is going to be at the center of it, just like I said about Cole Palmer. And so him to score or assist is plus 175. Neto excels in space, and if there's anything available in Spurs games, it is space out on the wing. And so for him to catch a turnover or whatever it might be from or a run behind on that crazy high line, once he gets it, I love what he does with the ball in the attacking third, and plus 175 seems like great value against this Spurs team to be somewhere in that goal contribution.
Yeah, I mean, I like it, man. The Spurs I'm better at handicapping than Wolves, but I feel like just their style of play leads to a lot of pretty enticing bets, and I like that one.
All right, well, an enticing game because it's like a reverse Hoosiers is we got Luton Town 17th at 20 points versus Manchester United 6th at 41 points. Game is Sunday at 11:30 a.m. United is minus 125. Luton is plus 300. The draw is plus 300. United minus half a goal is minus 120. Luton is minus 110. And that's what I mean. We have United, the Yankees of soccer, coming to this bandbox, this like 10,000 person ground. It's like the Hoosiers gym from the movie. And it's basically even. Like, what is going on here? How far has United fallen that they come to this little place and they are not dominant favorites? This is an almost even bet that Luton could draw a point against them. And look, it's probably deserved. United survived last week. It's nice to see Maguire head that ball down that led to United's first goal because I like seeing him generate goals for both teams. I like that he's equal opportunity in that way. And of course, their best striker, McTominay, wins it for them. Regardless of where he's playing on the pitch, he is the best guy in front of the goal on that team. So I'm ultimately going to take United here, but I'm here for the Luton arguments because I know how much you want to fade United for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if I could pull this off better, I'm basically like Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad where he just screams out he can't keep getting away with this.
Yes.
That is what I look every time I pull up the FB ref page of Manchester United and I see the results versus their underlying performance, or I just look at the starting 11s they're rolling out there and then see them get points from that match. I just want to scream that to the mountaintops. And so I'm just going to keep doing it. Luton, give me Luton money time or money line. But here's the thing that I'm going to go with. I wanted to try to find a way in the prop bet that wouldn't have maybe as high of a variance play as taking them all the way on the money line. And that's the United of under 1.5 team goals is plus 120. So you kind of get a United win. You get the 1-0 United win in there. You get the 1-1 draw in there. And then you also get the Luton Town wins where they rip through a pretty porous United defense and but still give up a goal to United, because I don't think you're going to get the Luton Town clean sheet win. So yeah, I kind of like that bet. The thing that really sticks out at me is this United team does not have very many good attackers, with Rashford being where he is right now this season. And so to get plus money on an under a goal and a half on when they're going away to the Bandbox, as you mentioned here, when they're going to be playing at Luton Town, I just thought that was such a great number.
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any way in hell Luton Town gets a clean sheet victory in this game. So I'm playing the over 2.5 goals at minus 160. I know it's not the sexiest number in the world, but Luton games have been wild recently. Like, I know they're at the bottom of the table and therefore they don't get as much attention on this show and in other places, but 4 goals in that Sheffield United match, 8 goals in the Newcastle match, 4 goals in the Brighton match, 3 in Everton, 3 against Bolton, for God's sakes, in the FA Cup, 5 in the Chelsea matchup, and 5 in the reverse fixture against Sheffield United. Like, these are awesome games, actually, if you don't give a damn about, like, brands or anything else like that. If you just want to see a crowd wilding out with tons of action, the Bundesliga has come to Luton. Like, let's do this. Over 2.5, minus 160 is a layup for me.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with that as well. I mean, Luton Town has definitely been in some wild ones. I mean, the fact that there were 6 goals in the Sheffield match was a little bit bizarre. Well, I think 2 of them were penalties, but still. And I mean, look, the one thing I will say about Luton Town is they're not hyper efficient. But that I think it's Elfie, right? It's Elfie, yeah. Doherty, or Doherty, or however you pronounce it. He just whips crosses in, like, whenever he gets any free space. It's hilarious. Like, he will literally cross into the final third, and if they are not marking him, that ball will just be whipped in. I think he's had like 20 some crosses at like 5 or 6 different matches here. So they just get the ball into the box. And I think because of that, you have these games where they can't score, but then you also have these random games due to the bounce of the ball, because it drops to somebody, there's a weird clearance, there's a handball from it or whatever. So I think he is not solely responsible, but definitely a big part of the fact that they just have these really weird, wild games, because he just pumps the ball into the box and just, like, they see what happens.
Well, I look forward to watching him do it on Sunday, just like I look forward to talking a little Champions League with you, Brett, right after this break.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
All right, Brett, we are back, and as promised, it is the Champions. Everybody didn't know I was going to sing on this one. We got Porto versus Arsenal. This game is not till Wednesday, so we're handicapping it way in advance. But for all of you Football Americano fans out there, this is one of the great things about soccer. They do post lines way ahead of time. So we've got Arsenal minus 135, the draw at plus 260, Porto at plus 380. Arsenal minus half a goal is minus 140, Porto is plus 110. So just a little bit about Porto. They have a lot of success historically in this championship, given their size. They have won the Champions League twice, most famously in 2004, launching one Mourinho into the world, where he claimed he was the special one and became a legend. They right now, though, are on a bit of harder times. They are third in the league behind Benfica and Sporting. Opta has them 26th in the world. Compare that to Arsenal, who's currently sitting fifth in the same rankings. They are led by a 30-year-old Brazilian, Wendell, and then some kids in Ivanilson, Pepe, and then goalkeeper Diego Costa. So that is what I know about Porto. I've watched them play a couple of times in the Champions League this year when they were playing Barca. I caught one of their regular season games earlier. I know you did a deep dive on them getting ready for the show. What did you learn?
That this isn't your grandpa's Porto. We were probably about 3 years late covering on the show. Porto, probably from, you know, the mid-teens to about 2020, 2021, we're definitely the quintessential you don't want to get them in the round of 16 team. They had a pretty legendary brawl with Juventus a few years ago, where I think Rabiot had a crazy screamer in like the second extra time to win it and get them to advance. And that was before Juventus like cratered. But they, you know, they had a bunch of really good players, but the Primeira Liga has just been rated. It's a sad indictment. There's a player that Brighton, I think, took a chance on named Victor Gorkys. I think I'm saying that right, but he is the leading goal scorer by a lot in the Primeira Liga right now. He has 16 goals and he does not play for Porto, by the way. So that kind of shows you, like, this isn't the league that it was even 3 years ago, where there was brimming with talent and you had Darwin Nunez and even, you know, João Felix is maybe 3 or 4 years removed. So this is just a shell of the Porto teams. I mean, you mentioned it before. They're third in the league. Their underlying numbers aren't very good. And their best player, Mehdi Taremi, who plays for the Iranian national team, so we've saw him in the World Cup, is actually going to sign a pre-contract with Inter. And so he's on his way out, and he's still their best attacker. So this one just doesn't feel like the same, oh no, we have Porto in the round of 16, as it does in years past. So the Arsenal money line being as low as it is just seems like a steal.
Cosign. Arsenal just destroyed West Ham 6-0. And it wasn't even that close. I mean, that was a complete dominant performance. On current form, they look like one of the very best teams in the world. We always talk about their defense. If their offense rounds into shape, that they can generate consistently 2 goals a match, not many teams are going to match that. Like, not many teams are going to get to 2 goals themselves. And they were going to come borderline unbeatable by anybody who's not like a top five, top 10 team. And Porto is not that. So I think -135 is way too low. I know it's on the road, which is driving that number down a little bit. But I trust this Arsenal team's mental makeup a little bit more than I did last year, particularly with Declan Rice settling in so well. And I think that -135 is a gift. In fact, I think the way to win this is because of that defense. Is a clean sheet win, a good team to do a good team. It looks like we mind melded again, +185 in 5 games versus peers this year for Porto, because like they play most of their games against, like, you know, second bottom of the table Portuguese teams that I don't even know like where they would finish in like League One in England. So you kind of have to only look at Porto games where they play other teams that are at least sniffing Arsenal's class. And that would be the times they played Benfica and Sporting and then Barca in the Champions League. They got shut out 4 times in those 5 games, twice by Benfica, once by Sporting, and once by Barca. And they only scored 1 in the loss to Barca to the Champions League. So, and by the way, none of those 3 teams are as good as Arsenal on defense. So 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, whatever it is, I feel very confident about the nil part of this equation.
Cosign. Might as well just move to the fine pipe, because I think we have like 2 or 3 of the same picks here, buddy.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's going to be less of a competition, which isn't good for me because I'm trailing you right now, Brett. You're up 2.5-2. Neither of us had that great a week. The one bet I win every single time is the corner bet, baby. I think I should just make 5 corner bets. I don't know why I'm doing anything else. That is all I can really handicap in the world of soccer, but I'll keep trying to do other things so this doesn't get too boring. My non-boring things this week are going to be Liverpool wins, both teams to score at plus 160, a Neto goal or assist at plus 175, Arsenal clean sheet win at plus 185, City on the goal and a half at minus 105, and then that United Luton over 2.5 at minus 160. What about you?
All right, well, I'm going to take the Arsenal money line against Porto at minus 135. I'm taking the clean sheet as well. I'm taking the Liverpool both the score bet as well. And that's where I think we're going to finally veer off here again. Taking Spurs win, both score plus 135, and City win, both score plus 135. So that's the clean sheet for Arsenal, and then three both favorites to win and both teams to score, which I'm sure, you know, soccer isn't random at all, and that always happens. So I can't wait to lose those.
Hey, as I said, I should play 5 corners. You should play all both teams to score and then pick the winner. And then maybe we'll finally get a little back to profitability. All right, Brett, the rest of the network is off next week, taking a break after we really grinded through an American football season. But you and I are going to be on next week. We're going to do Trendy, and then we will also do Covered in Glory. We are taking our break the week after. So we're splitting the network in half, kind of like the Premier League in winter break, so we can keep serving content, but everybody can have a little bit of a chance to clear their head. So I'm sorry to disappoint everybody, but we will be back next week with our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis. Enjoy the games, everyone.